Hi, this is Susie Larson. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast of Live the Promise. You know, shows like this are made possible because of your continued support of Faith Radio. To learn more, please check out our website at myfaithradio.com. Good afternoon, and thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Welcome to the weekend edition of Live the Promise. Glad you tuned in today. Well, let me tell you, I am expectant for today's show. We'll be talking with a very special woman. Her name is Marie Monville. Maybe you've not heard of her just yet. She was thrust into the public eye 7 years ago when her husband committed a tragic act of violence in an Amish schoolhouse. She joins me today bravely to share her story about how God healed her and her children after this loss. And maybe you are walking through a particularly dark and dreary valley right now. Well, this is what my guest says to you. No matter how tragic your circumstances, your life is not a tragedy. It's a love story. And in your love story, when you think of all the when the lights have gone out, know this, one light still shines. That is absolutely true. I really pray that you find some deep encouragement today. And her story will really grip your heart. And I think even more than the story is the insight God has given her about how to walk through a valley and trust God in every single way. Let me tell you about my guest, and we'll get her on the show. Marie Monville speaks across the country sharing her testimony of redemption and healing from tragedy. She's a lifetime resident of the Lancaster, Pennsylvania area, where she and her husband, Dan, continue to raise their five children. Marie, welcome. So glad to have you with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great to be with you. Well, we love to start out all of our conversations talking scripture. It's always just wonderful and intriguing for us to find out how God is using his word in the lives and hearts of everyday people. And you chose Isaiah 51:3, and it says, "The Lord will surely comfort Zion and will look with compassion on all her ruins. He will make her deserts like Eden, her wastelands like the garden of the Lord. Joy and gladness will be found in her, thanksgiving and the sound of singing." That's a powerful verse. Talk to us about that passage.
You know, I've just been immersed in the pages of Isaiah, especially for the last 7 years. And, you know, there's so much there that is applicable when we're going through a difficult time. And the words just really resonate so clearly with the way I've felt and what I've seen. And God truly does restore the waste places and bring joy and gladness, you know, to areas of our lives where we feel like, you know, it's been so decimated that it's just not possible, but he truly does.
You know, it's true even when it doesn't feel true, right?
Absolutely.
Well, tell us how you met your first husband, Charlie, and a little bit about your relationship, if you don't mind.
Sure. We actually met at church. He was a couple years older than I was, and, you know, just kind of noticed each other. When I was in my senior year of high school, we started dating, and, you know, I appreciated his quiet nature and the way that he interacted with his younger cousins, and, you know, he seemed to have all the qualities that I was looking for.
And so you dated, you got married, and you lost your first child, right?
Yes, we did. At 26 weeks of pregnancy, I had started to experience some complications at 20 weeks, but, you know, we were so unprepared that morning that Elise was born. We just didn't imagine that it was going to end that way. And, you know, it really plunged us into a time of seeking the Lord and finding him in the midst of pain.
And then how did you sort through that loss in the days that followed?
You know, I think for me, I tried to just immerse myself in who God is and allow him to define my life and not be defined by tragedy. But it was very difficult because everything that I wanted was not what I had. And I really felt the Lord challenging me to be content just where I was, you know, with the fact that my daughter was in heaven and I was on earth, and to just simply be content with that. And it wasn't easy, but it was his presence and his love that brought me to a place of peace where I could surrender everything I wanted and trust that he was going to, you know, and help me be patient and work out the circumstances according to his plan.
And then how would you say, you know, looking back now, that Charlie processed that loss?
You know, we talked about it. It wasn't like he was silent, but it was easy for me to see that now, you know, looking back and when I was writing the book that he didn't track in the same way that I had, you know, that he didn't get to that place of surrender and contentment with the Lord, even in the years following when we did go on to have other children. You know, he was still fixated on the loss as opposed to finding joy in the midst of sorrow.
I mean, yeah, hindsight is 20/20, but in reading your book, that was something that very much fueled his angst. But I sure can see if he's a
right.
private, quiet person, that that happened under the surface, and you didn't see any evidence of that.
Absolutely. You know, I would see periodic times of depression. They wouldn't last for more than just a couple days. It didn't interfere with his ability to go to work. You know, he still was able to involve himself in our family, you know, maybe not quite as intensely when he was going through those times, but they didn't last long. And the more I encouraged him to talk about it with someone, the more he would withdraw. But it wasn't anything that changed his personality, or, you know, he didn't have episodes of anger or, you know, anything that would have alluded to what was coming.
And so based on what I'm reading out of your book, he really was, you know, like no couple has it perfect, but he was, you had a loving family with children and a loving marriage and lived in a beautiful country. You know, your homeland was just so beautiful, and that really was your life, wasn't it?
Yes, you know, I had wanted to be a wife and a mom all my years growing up, and it wasn't like every day felt like I was living a dream, but, you know, it was the substance of what I had hoped for. And so I continued to pray, even in the hard days, that God would bring his redemption and his love in a greater way, even into Charlie's heart.
Okay, so now we're going to, if you don't mind, go to October 2nd, 2006. Talk about just what that morning was like before you received that phone call.
You know, it was such a beautiful morning, and everything seemed to be as it should be. Charlie walked down to the bus stop with the children and I. He gave them a kiss and told them that he loved them. And we didn't know that it was such a final goodbye, you know. It was a very beautiful day. It was an Indian summer type day, and it was, you know, very warm for the beginning of October. Our windows were open, and there was so much life happening. You know, there was harvesting going on in the fields around us. It was just a picture-perfect kind of morning that couldn't have alluded to what was coming.
Wow, okay. And so you kissed your kids goodbye. They went to school, and then Charlie left. And then you received a phone call. Take it from there.
Yes, he called and told me that he wasn't coming home. And, you know, his voice was unlike anything I had ever heard before in our almost 10 years of marriage. And I knew that I would never see him again. I didn't understand what he was talking about or what he was going to do. You know, the conversation was brief, and there were a lot of things that didn't make sense. But I could quickly understand that my world was changing, and everything I had thought to be true about the stability of my life was over. You know, I never would have imagined that it would have involved other people, much less children.
And so he called, and give it just a synopsis. You write about this in the book, but give a synopsis of what he said to you, because you were really broadsided by this. What did he say in that phone call?
You know, he talked a little bit about the loss of Elise from years before, and talked about his anger with the Lord, and said that he was going to do something he should have done before. And, you know, it was just a lot of irrational statements, nothing that gave any kind of clear indication of where he was going with this. But, you know, then wrapped up the conversation by saying that he loved me and he loved our family, and to let his parents and his brothers know that he loved them as well.
And that there was a note for you on the nightstand.
Yes, yes. Mm. He told me that there was a letter that he had left for me in our bedroom. And, you know, after we hung up the phone and I went and retrieved the letter and read it, I had never read a suicide note, but I was sure that that must be what it was. And so I called 911 thinking, well, if there's something going on and they know about it, maybe I can give them details that will help to stop whatever's coming.
Good for you for doing that. I mean, that's fast thinking in the middle of getting a call like that. How did they respond to you on 911?
You know, I could tell that they knew something and that they weren't telling me what was going on. I could tell by their questions that they had some information, and they were just keeping me on the phone for a very long time. And, you know, I was starting to get nervous thinking, well, what if he would try to call me back? I'm stuck on the phone with them, and I didn't really feel like I was getting anywhere, you know, trying to find out what was going on. But at the same time, I could hear the sounds of the helicopters going overhead and the police cars going up the street. And, you know, I just had this sinking feeling in the pit of my stomach that it was all related.
Wow. And so in one breath, I mean, you really are, your world is sort of crashing in. And when you, basically it was so powerful to me that you got off the phone and you cried out to God and he met you. Talk about just that encounter with God amidst of, you know, you're facing something enormous, but you don't know what yet. And yet God ushered, just rushed in, and he ushered you into his presence. Talk about that moment.
Well, you know, just in the middle of all of the chaos that was starting to swirl around me, I knew that I had to make a choice, and I really felt the presence of the Lord so tangibly with strength that was way beyond myself. And I knew that I needed to choose if I was going to trust him and trust him with these circumstances. You know, I could choose to believe that thing I had ever read in the pages of the Word and heard someone testify of the Lord to be. I could choose to believe that everything that I had felt the Lord speak to me in the years previous, that all of that was true and that somehow he was going to rescue us. Or I could choose to believe that we were going down like the fast sinking ship. And while I couldn't comprehend a way that he could, you know, do anything out of these circumstances, I simply knew that he's able and that there's nothing that's impossible for the Lord. And I knew that I had nothing to lose by trusting him. And so on the feet of the Lord and asked him to come and to be present in this situation and to help our family and anyone else that was involved.
So there was a certain measure of grace and presence that you just experienced while you were waiting, and you still didn't know what was happening, and then you called your mom. So you called out to God, then you called your mom. Talk about that conversation with your mom.
Yes, I called my mom. She was at work about 10 minutes away, and told her about Charlie's conversation with me and, you know, my conversation with the 911 dispatcher, and asked if she could come to my house. And we decided that she would pick up my children, my daughter who was at school. The youngest was, you know, that of the school-age children, he was on his way home on the bus. So she would go get my daughter. And, you know, just having the presence of a mom who cares and who loves and who is, you know, always there when you need a parent like that, it was just wonderful. You know, having that source of strength, I think it exemplified the strength that I was feeling from the Lord. I was also seeing it in my mom and then in my dad as well.
Mm, and so she came over. How did you find out then what Charlie had done?
It wasn't long until the police were at my door. You know, I saw them pull into the driveway, and I met them at the door, and I said to them, "It's Charlie, isn't it?" And they said, "Yes." And I said, "And he's dead, isn't he?" And they said, "Yes."
Mm. And then how did they treat you?
You know, they asked questions at first. I was sure that they were trying to decide, you know, if I had any information about what had happened. And it was very easy for them to understand that I knew nothing. You know, I didn't have any answers for questions. And they, you know, they knew that I wasn't involved in any way. And then they started to tell me about the things that had happened there. And it was just beyond my comprehension, because everything I knew of Charlie to be was exactly the opposite of what happened in the schoolhouse that day.
And for those who don't know, and you don't need to get into details, but just for those who don't really know the story, it happened 7 years ago. In a nutshell, can you explain what happened when Charlie went there that morning?
You know, from what I was told, and you know, what is available to read online, he barricaded the door of the schoolhouse and took the girls hostage. And there were one or two that were able to get away. He let the teacher go, the teacher and some other women that were there, and the boys, they all left. And then he shot the girls, and five of them were injured, and five of them died.
Mm-hmm. And I remember something in the letter that when he was talking about Elise, was there that connection between these little girls and letting the boys go? I mean, the loss of his daughter really caused him to be quite angry with God. But was that the connection there?
Yes, that's what he suggested in the letter, that it, you know, that he felt like he was getting back at the Lord for the loss of our daughter. And, you know, there were so many things about that, you know, and about the conversation, that they were things that made sense in his mind, but just don't make any sense to the rest of us.
Mm-hmm. And so in the time that followed, you've got policemen at your house. How did those next few hours unfold for you?
You know, there was no way that I could have ever been prepared for that moment, and no way to think that I would live beyond it, except to say that the grace of the Lord came in a really present and tangible way that was unlike anything I had ever known before, and really spoke to our hearts in a deep way, to me and to my family and to, you know, my children especially, and just carried us through all of that difficulty.
And your dad, I believe, if I remember right, was driving a truck. And so it was either you or your mom that called him and asked him not to listen to the radio, just to come over. Is that right?
Right, right. And then when he got to my house, he didn't know what happened. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of time at that point. I was packing and trying to get things ready. I knew that we had to leave our home because of the invasion of the media. And so I was just trying to get things prepared to go. And so I just quickly told him what happened. And, you know, I won't ever forget the look on his face. And, you know, the way that life changed for all of us.
And I remember you saying a police officer was especially kind, getting you ready, kind of just guarding and protecting you while you
Right.
get ready to be packed. And this statement just blew me away from your book. In my earthly world, I had been abandoned and left to answer for someone else's actions. And at the same time, I was being sheltered and surrounded by an impenetrable strength. This came not just from the police force, but also through the spiritual reality that superseded my natural circumstances. If you're able, talk a little bit more about the reality of those two dynamics at work at the same time, because you have a storm all around you, but somehow the Lord had tucked you in the shadow of his wing. Say more about that.
Absolutely. You know, everything that was going on in the physical realm was in complete opposite of what I was feeling on the inside, in a spiritual nature. You know, where there was chaos around me, there was peace inside. And it's unlike anything I would have imagined. You know, when we hear about stories on the news of tragedies and people going through really traumatic times, you think about how their heart broke and the circumstances that they faced. But, you know, I don't think I had ever stopped to imagine the tenderness and the peace of God that also comes in those moments. But there was such a grace of the Lord and such a strength and provision of his that was unlike anything I had ever experienced before, that settled me and gave me the ability to just take it one breath at a time, you know, and answer one question at a time, and to just believe that somehow he was going to help us get past these moments and to still live and breathe on the other side of it.
And you describe it, Marie, as just a gift of grace, that God really just moved in. It wasn't anything that you'd done. It was just more what he was doing for you, right?
Absolutely. You know, it was nothing at all that was about me or, you know, that I could do on my own. All of this was completely different than who I thought of myself to be, just very shy and quiet. But it was just the grace of God that came just out of his love and his mercy and his compassion for our family and for, you know, what we were facing, just as he felt love and grace and compassion for everyone else that was touched by this as well.
Well, here's another powerful excerpt from your book. You say, I would guess that not even 3 hours had passed since Charlie had called me. In that brief time, I'd been widowed, my children made fatherless, my community assaulted, my home searched, my husband's name disgraced, and my naive innocence shattered. Almost everything that this morning had been a certainty was now in question. Almost everything. Here again, you're really declaring that everything was blowing up, but there was still this inner knowing. And do you attribute that, Marie, to years of walking with him and storing the word in your heart, or totally just God's grace, or both? Explain that if you can.
You know, I think it really is both. I do think that it was kind of like all those deposits over the years of reading the word and time spent in prayer and allowing the Lord to shepherd my heart through other times of difficulty and tragedy. You know, it was those past experiences that infused me with the faith to believe that just as he had gotten me through other times of sorrow, that he was going to get me through this, even though it was so much larger than anything I had ever faced before. But, you know, at the same time, I believe it was the grace and the peace of God that, you know, if I wouldn't have known who he was and I wouldn't have had those years of walking with the Lord, I still think that he would have came in the very same way because he loves his children.
Yeah. And yet I really do believe you recognized him more readily because you'd mm-hmm. cultivated a life of listening to him and knowing
Absolutely.
What he sounds like, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
How did the community respond to you in the days that followed?
You know, there was the outreach from the community in many different ways, and one of the communities that surrounded us was the Amish community. And you know, within the first hours after this had taken place, I was at my parents' home, and I was looking out their kitchen window, and I saw some Amish men walking towards my parents' house. I knew they were coming there. You know, this was a community where I grew up and had lived almost my whole life, and we knew each other. You know, we knew these families. And I went to my parents and said, "What should I do? You know, I don't know what to say to them. What do you think I should do?" And my dad said, "It's okay, you can stay inside and I'll go out and talk with them." And so I watched from the window. I couldn't hear what was said, but, you know, I could see the expressions on their faces, and I saw them put their hands on his shoulder and wrap their arms around him. And their tenderness conveyed so much to me. And as he came inside, you know, it took him some time to recover from the emotion of that moment. And he said, "Marie, they came because they wanted you to know that they're concerned about you and concerned about the children. They've forgiven Charlie, and they're extending grace and compassion over your whole family." And that was such an amazing moment. You know, I couldn't have had enough time to even think about what it might be like the first time that, you know, that someone from my family talked with someone from the Amish families. There wasn't even time to think about how they would respond or what they would say. There were so many details and questions and things that were constantly assaulting me. You know, I hadn't had time to formulate a response. There was no way to give a response that would even be appropriate for the loss they had sustained. But in that moment, I believe that they really lifted the weight of me having to come up with something to say that would give an account for Charlie's actions, and instead freed me into the loving arms of the Lord to just receive the healing that he had intended. And, you know, it was such grace of God that they came like that and continued to extend their love and support over our family, you know, in the days and weeks ahead. And then there was the community that was not Amish, that was very close by where we lived. And a lot of them would stop in to just check on us and see how we were doing, to see if there was anything they could pick up for us at the grocery store or to drop off a plate of cookies.
Wow.
You know, we were well loved by our community.
That is amazing. Keep going.
And, you know, then there was the broader range of people all across the United States and the world that began sending us cards and letters of encouragement, letting us know that they were praying for us, that they believed that God had a plan and a purpose, and that there was hope for our future. So, you know, that the dimension of being surrounded by community went in kind of like ripples in a pond from really close by where we were to really reaching far out around us.
That is just such a beautiful testament, and especially these Amish men so soon after able to walk up to your dad's doorstep and to extend that hand of love. Only Christ in a person would allow that kind of love and forgiveness, but it's so beautiful. But on the flip side, I'm thinking, of course you had nothing to do with this, and this, you guys are victims of this tragedy as well, and but you're still going to find someone in the crowd who's going to try to throw a stone. Did you experience that, or did God shield you from that?
You know, we experienced that too, but I think the beauty was that there was so much encouragement and support coming that even in those times that felt very discouraging, it wasn't enough to overwhelm all of the beauty that God was doing. So, you know, there was a choice to just lay that aside and say, yes, I can see how someone would have harsh things to say, you know, I understand we're all human and we're all processing this in our own way, but be able to set that aside and say what's important is what the Lord thinks about me, and he's surrounding us in such tangible ways with encouragement and love and support on all sides.
Boy, he is good. He is good. Well, I'm talking to Marie Monville today. She's author of the book, One Light Still Shines, My Life Beyond the Shadow of the Amish Schoolhouse Shooting. We've got three copies to give away today, and I'm only going to open the phone lines for just a little bit. So if you've got a question, we're going to take those calls right after the break. Here's the number, 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. Talking to Marie Monville, and we will be back in just a moment. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to Marie Monville, a gripping book. We've got three copies of this beautiful hardcover book, beautifully written. It's an amazing story. The title, One Light Still Shines, My Life Beyond the Shadow of the Amish Schoolhouse Shooting. And Marie's husband was the shooter that 7 years ago in October, shooting in the Amish schoolhouse. And this is a story of redemption, of how God has taken what that enemy has meant for evil and turned it for good. And so, Marie, you've done such a beautiful job just really unpacking this story and how the community has come around you. In fact, you say God's gifts are far too easy to miss when all of hell is breaking loose. And I'm thinking of that person who feels like all of hell is breaking loose. How do they look for and find the gifts of God that are very present in the midst of the chaos?
Well, I think for me, the first thing was to ask him to help me to see it, because it's so easy to just be sidelined by, you know, the disaster around you, that that becomes the whole focus. But just, you know, by asking him to help me see the beauty that he was doing, and then to grab hold of each one of those moments, no matter how small they might seem, and just give them the value that they have because of who the Lord is.
Mm, boy, what a great way to put that. Well, what was it like to talk to your kids? You know, I know in the story you talk about even that, which just seemed like an impossibility when you sat down. I mean, God graced you in that place as well. Talk about that moment.
You know, I couldn't imagine living through that. All the things that I had ever thought that would be hard to talk about with my children, that was beyond anything I had ever imagined. And I really couldn't figure out how we were all going to live through that. And you know, I was listening to the children playing in the backyard with my parents, and just soaking in the sounds of their laughter and thinking, I don't want this to be the last time I ever hear this. Mm. And, you know, kind of not wanting to cross over to the other side of what life looked like now, but knowing that I couldn't avoid it forever. And so as I called them in, they sat with me on the couch, Abigail on one side and Bryce on the other and Carson on my lap. And I knew that they needed to know the truth. You know, they needed to know what happened, because I didn't want them going back to school and potentially hearing things said on the playground that they would want to think weren't true, that potentially could be. You know, I knew that they had to know that they could trust me to tell them the truth even when it was difficult. But I knew that they didn't need to know all of the details at once, that it was, you know, completely overwhelming for my heart and mind to process through those things. But you know, how would a child be able to handle all of that? And so as I talked with the counselors, I said to them, you know, I think this is what I'm going to tell them. And it is what I said to the children that day. Today, your dad made some very bad choices, and some people were hurt, and some people were killed, and he died too. And you know that it was enough to say that in that moment. It was certainly enough for me to say it, and I believe it was enough for them to hear it. And so we just sat there, and I was kind of thinking, okay, God, how do we even get past this moment? You know, how do we go from this place to something else? I don't know how to transition out of this. And just in the sweet nature of a child, my youngest, who was 18 months at the time, you know, we're all kind of sitting there in silence for a few moments. And then I think he could feel, you know, the weight of that. And he looked at his brother and asked if he wanted to play. And, you know, it was just beautiful even how the Lord showed us how to get beyond that and to move, you know, into the rest of life.
Did your children have to deal with any repercussions at school from other kids?
No, you know, they really did not. They they were just surrounded again by the grace and the protection of the Lord.
Thank you, Lord.
That nothing was ever said to them that was unkind. And the school really did such a wonderful job about working with their teachers and with the classrooms, just helping them to understand that they had gone through some really difficult things, and you know, and we needed to be sensitive to them. So there was just such a grace in every way.
And then talk about Charlie's funeral, and can imagine that could have been a media circus, was it? And what was that like for you?
You know, I knew that there wouldn't be any media on the property of the church, so to me, I thought we would be okay. I didn't realize that the media would be across the street from the church with very large cameras, and so as we came close to the church that day, I was just devastated because, you know, here were these cameras that looked like the size of telescopes, and I couldn't imagine how we would be able to, you know, stay safe and out of the spotlight that way, and I didn't want to think that the whole world was looking on in this private moment of our grief. But as we turned into the church parking lot, there was a line of Amish people that started walking towards us. And as we, you know, parked the car, they stood between us and the parking lot and where the media was. And so the only thing that could be seen from the street were the backs of those Amish people.
That is absolutely amazing.
Yes, because they chose to shield our family. And, you know, if you know anything about the Amish community, you know that they do not like to have their picture taken. And so in many ways, you know, they were choosing to do something that was very difficult, you know, and very, very much a blessing to our family and to those of us that were there at the graveside that day.
Wow, Marie, that we could sure learn something from them in that moment, especially when you think of, I've brought this up on the show so many times lately because it's just burdening my heart, but the infighting and the way that we treat each other, you know, as Christians when we disagree with each other. And here they, their community had been devastated and that they still put themselves between you and the onlookers. That's amazing.
Yes, it was such a gift. You know, I couldn't have imagined that they would even be there. And then to see how they chose to respond to our family with such grace, you know, and such compassion for that place of mourning that we were in was just tremendous.
When you wrote, Charlie's choices were crushing. I couldn't undo them, but I was free to make my own. And, you know, it's so true that we can get stuck in the choices of others, but somehow we do have to reclaim our own ability to choose our response to evil. And I want you to talk about why that is such an such a critical part of the healing process.
You know, I think it's easy to feel powerless, which makes a situation seem hopeless. But, you know, through the love of God and through the redemption of the Lord and through who he is, we are not powerless. You know, I knew that there was nothing I could do in my own strength to overcome the situation, but I also knew that there was nothing that was impossible for the Lord. And so realizing that God is able even when we're not and even when we think the circumstances aren't capable of being changed, God is still able. you know, and setting our mind on that perspective gives the ability to realize that there is power for us, and we have the power to make our choices, you know, and to direct our lives even in the midst of really difficult situations.
So good. You wrote that these questions plagued you. What kind of man would execute little girls? How could my Charlie be that man? Were there signs there that I missed? Could I have stopped this? How can I explain what he did? Marie, how'd you sort through those questions, and do they continue to plague you?
You know, just laying them down at the feet of the Lord and allowing God to give me his perspective on my life and on his love for me and on who, you know, he saw me to be even in the midst of those circumstances. Sometimes we want, and oftentimes we want, questions and answers and things that we're not going to be able to have. You know, there were so many questions that only Charlie knew the answer to that I didn't have. And so it just became for me a time of sitting down with the Lord and laying out before him all of the things that I was thinking and feeling and allowing God to do something with that, knowing that I wasn't going to get the kind of answers that I wanted, but knowing that God was still going to do something with my questions and bring me healing if I allowed it. And it wasn't like I only had to do that one time. You know, the process of healing and forgiveness and just dealing with our emotions is oftentimes several, you know, many times over of coming back to him with the same thing and allowing him to continue the healing process even in deeper ways in our hearts.
You know, grieving is such a painful thing to go through, but you're almost, you know, twice burdened when you're dealing with something that you didn't know. You know, I hear about a wife who loved her husband, thought they had a great marriage. He dies, and she finds out the finances are completely in disarray to the point that she's left with this mess, or maybe that he's not been faithful, and vice versa. But you're grieving the loss of someone you loved in a life you thought you had, but then you're also grieving, you know, the things that you didn't know were going on under the surface. And what was most helpful to you, Marie, in sorting through some of those kinds of things, were that sense of maybe even betrayal, that how could my Charlie do this? What was most helpful to you in that grieving process?
You know, just to allow the Lord to speak his truth of who I am and the life that he has planned for me and my children beyond that moment, you know, to bathe myself in his hope and his joy, even when the circumstances didn't seem to give way to that, but just really allowing him to do exactly what it says in that verse of Isaiah 51, that, you know, he will bring thankfulness and joyfulness, that he'll show us how to be thankful for things that we still, you know, can treasure inside of our hearts. And so really it was just the shifting of my mind from everything that surrounded me in the natural to all of the things that the Lord promises us in the supernatural, you know, the way that he's going to restore us, to restore those wasteland places and to give us joy. And just, you know, fixing my mind on him and allowing him to help me through all of the grieving and the loss, but to know that it didn't define my life, that it would always be a part of who I was and the story that I tell, but that it wasn't the definition of who I am.
That's powerful. And I love your parents. Just reading about them, you
yeah.
are blessed with some pretty amazing parents, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Well, you met another man. Talk about how that happened. I mean, did that surprise you? Was that something God put a longing on your heart? Tell us how that came about.
You know, it was an absolute surprise to me. I remember in the first week after everything had happened with Charlie, having this conversation with the Lord and saying to him, okay, God, you know how much I love being married. You know that, you know, that was my dream all along, to be a wife and a mom. But I can't imagine that there would be one man on the face of this earth that would be capable of handling what my life looks like now. And so if it's just you and me, Jesus, forever, I am totally fine with that. But if there is a man, just bring me one, because I'm not dating. It was
good.
Not something that I imagined that the Lord would, you know, have a desire to move on quickly. But my husband now, Dan Monville, I did meet him shortly after everything had happened. He was a distant connection through our family. People knew that he knew of us, and so they had given him some things for my children. Someone that he worked with was involved with a group that made quilts for children who had gone through tragedies and traumas, and she had given him some quilts for my kids. And he called, a family member that was kind of our connection point and asked her if she could get these things to me, and she said, "No, why don't you and your kids go down and visit with Marie and her children?" And she gave him my phone number, which I thought was a terrible idea. I didn't want to talk to some guy I didn't know, and so I deleted his first several messages, and after the third one, I thought, oh my goodness, I guess I'm going to really have to call this guy back. You know, I knew who he was, but I did not know him, and so I didn't want to have to talk to a man I didn't know, but I arranged for him to come to my parents' house at a time I would be there, thinking that would make it a little bit more comfortable because they knew him better than I did. And, even that first night meeting him, I certainly wasn't thinking that the Lord was going to do something with that. But in the months that followed, God just started to speak to my heart about Dan Monville. And I was rather reluctant, and really thought that I was hearing wrong or that the Lord was speaking wrong, because how could he be talking about me, embracing a relationship so soon after. But at Christmas that year, my son, who was 5 at the time, asked if I could get him a new dad for Christmas. Hmm. And it completely changed my perspective. You know, knowing that all kids need a mom and a dad, and my kids needed a dad more then than ever before. And so if this was what God wanted, I didn't know how, but I would trust him. And within a week, Dan Monville called, and we started talking, and he began to tell me what God had been speaking to his heart about me and my family, and the way that he felt God infusing him with a love for our family. And so it's just an amazing story that went from there. It's certainly not what I would have thought the Lord would have done, but I am beyond thankful for the way that God brought Dan into my life, and for the way that he is a wonderful dad to my children, and for his children, who have also, been a great part of our family, for the way that God has blended our lives together.
Wow. Did it take you long to trust again, or is that something, again, God gave you grace for?
I knew that I couldn't allow the things of the past to have root in the future, because there was no future in the past. And so I had to embrace this relationship with Dan completely separate from everything that had happened with Charlie. And I knew that I had to trust, from day one. I had to trust him, and I had to trust the Lord. And so it was a choice that I made, because I didn't want the past and everything that happened with Charlie to have any bearing on our lives and our relationship with one another.
And how,
but that was definitely grace from the Lord to be able to do that.
Hmm. Talk to me about your kids and how they've just adapted to Dan.
They really love him, and he loves them. And even the first time that our family went on a date together, our families dated because we knew that we would have to see the same things happening in the lives of our children that we felt the Lord speaking to us. It was easy to see Dan was capable of connecting with them each where they are. And, he didn't force his way in, but just allowed them to open the door. And I appreciate the way that he's thoughtful and sincere and just heartfelt with each one, just for the person that they are. And I think that has been amazing in the way that their relationships have grown with him.
And how old are all your children now?
The 3 that I had at the time, they are now 14, 12, and 8. And then I have 2 stepchildren who are also 14 and 21.
Wow. And do your kids ask questions anymore about the story about Charlie, about that time 7 years ago, or are they kind of moved on?
We talk about it from time to time, just because I don't want them to forget. I think it would be so easy if you didn't talk about it to kind of lock it away and pretend that it never happened, and then have to deal with it in a really startling way. And certainly, we process things differently as we get older and can understand things on different levels. And so we try to talk about things with them, as the years go. And there's a lot of healing that's taken place on all kinds of levels in all of us, and I'm thankful for the way that God continues to work his plan in our hearts.
And I just had lunch with a friend today, and she's actually sitting in studio with me, Cindy Hall, such a treasure having you in here with me. But we were talking over lunch how when things don't go the way we want them to, and even worse, when things just take your breath away, there is so much more of God to experience. We never want to go to those places, but I know for me, when I look at the things that I've suffered or walked through, I feel like, for lack of a better term, I'm a better Christ follower. There's more of God that I appreciate and know. And yet I can't even imagine walking through what you walked through. But when looking back, how are you different for the better after walking through what this enemy meant for evil here?
You know, I think it's only the Lord that we can find things that are buried deep inside of ourselves, strengths and abilities, you know, that we would have never found otherwise, that God could release those in the midst of tragedy and trauma. And, you know, I feel like I've gotten to know myself so much better and to find strengths and to find things out about myself that I can say are beautiful, that I wouldn't have even thought to look for otherwise, but to know that He has made me to enjoy life, you know, to love who I am and what He's doing in my life, and to love who He is. And you're right. I feel like I know the Lord in such a much deeper way because, you know, I knew that I was desperate for Him and that I had nothing on my own. And He's come in such a powerful way and brought so much life to me and to my family that it's just breathtaking. He continues to surprise me.
Well, you are such a gracious, articulate woman, and you know, you lived this hidden life, just loving the Lord, and you were thrust into a spotlight that you would never choose. But boy, Marie, you're handling it so beautifully. I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
I remember towards the end of the book, maybe two-thirds of the way through, I don't remember the exact context, but a woman came to your door and asked, if I remember kind of cynically, is it really true that you did not see this coming? Do you remember that part of the story?
Yes.
Would you mind just sharing what happened there in the context there?
You know, that was a day that really surprised me. I was busy getting my children ready for school. You know, it's kind of chaotic, you know, feeding three kids and getting everybody dressed and down to the bus stop and making sure that lunches were packed and all that kind of thing. And the doorbell rang, and I was so surprised, and I went to answer it, and just I stood on the porch with this lady and chatted with her just a very few brief moments. But she, you know, she said, I have to see for myself if you really are who they say you are and that you didn't know anything. And it was a difficult situation, a difficult time of knowing, you know, kind of everything that I had thought maybe people were thinking about me and wondering about me, that there really were people, you know, who doubted me and doubted my innocence and doubted all of the things that had been reported about me. And in some ways, it was tremendously heartbreaking. But again, you know, I had to just go back to the Lord and say, okay, God, you know the truth of my heart, and you know who I am, and I'm not going to allow this one experience to just, you know, sideline me and discourage me from all the things that you're doing. And it was hard, you know, and it wasn't kind, and it wasn't done from a place of someone really being sincere and sympathetic. But I understand that we all process things differently, and you're going to give me grace to get through this moment. And God, I pray that you would give her grace to get through this moment too.
Just thinking this morning as I was getting ready for work about how it is so easy to let someone's outdated or wrong opinion of us sideline what God wants to do in us. And that does take some kind of courage and grit to go, you know, they may have a kernel of truth, they may have no truth, they may have summed me up from way back when, but God, you have an updated opinion. And that's really the only way we can keep walking is and not be diminished by people's opinions, is to remember His opinion, right?
Absolutely. You know, it's very easy to take the criticism or critique of others to be the truth. And it's so important that we go back to the Lord with those statements and just ask Him where that fits, you know, in His scale of things. And sometimes it doesn't fit at all in His grid, and it needs to not stay in ours either. You know, and in those moments, we just have to be free to let it go and to kind of let it roll off our back and not continue to weigh us down.
Well, Marie, we just have a few minutes left, but tell me, if you could, what you love about the Amish people, and even what we can learn as God's people by how they worship God, how they live their lives.
You know, I love that their faith is such an integral part of who they are, and that they don't have to think about their obedience to the Lord. They just are obedient. And I think that that's been something that's really stuck with me throughout the years, that all the times, you know, that we feel the promptings, or I've felt the promptings of the Lord, and I haven't always been obedient in the moment, you know, that I need to choose that, because not only will that be a blessing to me, but I've seen the way that blesses other people, and it's so life-giving.
Mm. Are you doing a lot of speaking? Are you out and about with the release of the book?
You know, I am some. To some degree, it definitely is a bit busier than it has been. In the past, I've just, as the doors have opened, have gone into churches or women's groups or, you know, other events to share the story of what God has done in my life and in my family. And I love the opportunity to talk about the Lord and the redemption that I've seen and the way that he breathes his love and his mercy and grace onto his children. And so it's a little bit busier this year, but I still get to do all the things that I love about being a mom and, you know, and still have the household tasks, that some of them that I don't always love. But, you know, life is still very much the same, even in the places that it's a little different. I'm just thankful for the beauty that it is.
Mm. Well, one last question before I ask you to pray. When you look into the future, you've got these kids, and as a mom whose kids are now in their 20s, you blink and they're grown. What do you see or dream about when you think about the future of what you want to do with the Lord and by his side, how you want to serve him? Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, you know, I love watching my kids grow and seeing who God is shaping them to become, and I think it's such a wonderful adventure to watch what has happened in our lives and what he wants to do with that. And, you know, it's exciting for me to dream about and think about who they are all going to become and how they're going to touch the world with the love of God and his redemption. And so for our family, you know, I want us to continue to live out the Lord in really intentional ways, to live out his love, and to look for places where we can impact the lives of another and someone that's hurting and needs his light.
Well, this has been just a sweet, precious time, and I'm so honored to have met you, Marie. Really just appreciate your spirit, and I'm thinking of that person who is in that valley of the shadow and feeling shaken to their core. Would you mind praying for that person?
I would love to. God, I thank you that you are close to us and that you hear the cry of our heart even before it's spoken on our lips, Lord. And I thank you that your mercy and your grace surrounds us, that you will never leave us or forsake us, that you are always with us. And God, I thank you that you are redeeming every situation, that nothing is beyond the redemption in your hand. And so, God, I ask that you would help us to lift our eyes, to focus on you, and to believe that you have a future and a hope for us, beauty beyond the brokenness of the moment, and to know that you will always walk by our side. God, I ask that this would be a season of renewal, of renewed life and renewed vision, and just excelling hope and joy in who you are.
Amen. Marie Monville, I'm so grateful that I met you today. God bless you, my sister.
Thank you.
Good to meet you. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise. You can find this whole interview at our website at myfaithradio.com, along with podcasts from Faith Radio Mornings, Connecting Faith, and Everyday Relationships. Remember, you're a radio missionary, so share this discussion with someone you know who needs to be encouraged in their faith. And tune in on Monday for Live the Promise. I'm joined by Rich Stearns, president of World Vision, along with his wife, Renee. They're going to share some amazing stories of seeing God move and change hearts all over the world. Finally, guess what? The Lord wants you to last long and finish strong. He's the one who keeps you strong to the end. Have a great day.